Good afternoon. The time is 12:06 and you're tuned to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY. Good afternoon. I'm Sarah D'Elia here in the studio. And if you'd like to be part of the conversation, 260-452-1185 is the number to call. Remember, you can always send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook page with any questions and comments you might have about today's show. I'm joined in the studio today with my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman.
Thank you, Sarah. Today's show will focus on the stressors and depressors of the holiday season. We will explore how these stresses and anxieties can sometimes prevent us from fully enjoying the inherent happiness, fellowship of family and friends, and spiritual renewal of this most colorful and joyous time of year. We will also talk about the myth of increased holiday seasonal suicides, and lastly, what we all can do to avoid the pitfalls of anxiety and depression that can ruin our holiday festivities and adversely affect our general health. I'd like to introduce our two guests today, Doctor of Nursing Aaron Rivera, Clinical Psychiatric Nurse Specialist at the St. Joseph Medical Group, and Colleen Carpenter with a Master's in Public Health, who spearheads suicide prevention programs and suicide aftercare counseling in Northern Indiana. Welcome, Aaron and Colleen.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I'd like to start out by asking Aaron, what is it about the last few years in Northern Indiana that has made the holiday season more stressful for so many more families than in the past?
Well, I think, as well as the rest of the country, I think the financial situation of many families has caused immense stress and terrible living situations. A lot of the people that do get admitted to the hospital are there for depression related to financial resources, their job is gone, their living situation has changed, and they see no hope. Mm-hmm. So really the financial world is horrific for some people.
And Colleen, we've also seen in recent years an upswing in the number of suicides in the United States that seems to correlate with the Great Recession in recent years. And the statistic has been made that suicides seem more prevalent in older white men. Mm-hmm. And do you feel there's an economic tie-in with this change in the statistics?
Yes, and in fact, the data do show a direct tie. So suicide rates are up about 4% from 2007 to 2010, and about a quarter of those suicides, so about 1,300 of those suicides, are directly related to the economic downturn. So yes, it absolutely is a concrete, unfortunate, traumatic effect of the economic downturn.
And we are dealing at this time with extreme scheduling and deadlines to meet and taking on much more than we possibly are able. And this causes a great deal of anxiety and stress. And Aaron, how does this affect families' mental health and especially the children in nuclear families and in families of divorce?
Holiday season is something that we all long for in our childhood. We love Christmas. We love experiencing time with our family. That was 50 years ago. Now, today's children have a lot more on their plate. If they're involved in a family of divorce, if they have step-parents, they also have step-aunt and uncles, step-grandparents, great-grandparents that may be step-grandparents. And so they deal with moving from one family to the other, sometimes all in the same day. And so it's difficult for the child emotionally, because sometimes they like the family they're visiting, sometimes they don't like the family they're visiting. Sometimes they have to go because it's a requirement for the family. And it's very difficult for these children. Sometimes they cannot even express how they feel. If they're pre-verbal, if they don't have the words for it, they don't even know how to say, "I don't like being here." That plays over then to the older child, who is resentful and unhappy about being there. And even the new spouse may be at places they don't want to be. So it's very emotional. It's very intense. You know, maybe the in-laws liked the first husband better than they liked the current husband. And so they all have to deal with expectations and likes and dislikes and just all kinds of emotional baggage that they may not have had to have dealt with the previous year. So it's very difficult for families. You want to be happy at Christmas time. You want to be connected to people, but it doesn't always work like that. And probably, truth be told, it works less like that than we expect. You know, we think people get along. People don't get along.
And I think expectations of just fulfilling that ideal cookie cutter image of what we see on TV and what's perpetuated throughout the media and what we're supposed to want in a perfect world are heightened. That's automatically stressful. Trying to really please everybody, I think, is what comes down in a lot of those situations, whether you're a child of divorce or you're partner to somebody who has multiple families in the area and you're trying to hit everybody before the day is through, whether that be Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever holiday you're celebrating. So
exactly. Just a little story. My parents weren't divorced. I'm 52 years old, but I can remember at about 10 years old asking my mother if we could be like normal families at Christmas time. And I guess she thought we were a normal family because she said to me, what do you mean? And I said, you know, can't we stand around the piano and sing Christmas songs like normal families do? Well, I don't think most families really do that. Most people don't even have a piano.
Right, right. But we build up these images in our head, like you were saying. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. You can also post on our Facebook page or send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm.
And as Sarah said, expectations are a major issue here. Not only expectations of that wonderful movie advertisement store show window Christmas that we all would love to experience, that we fantasize, but also expectations of a happy moment, of getting back with family members that we may not have seen for the past 364 days. Mandatory showing up at a family gathering, the old arguments, the old relationships of the past sometimes come to the fore again at Christmas, and people's expectations are not met, or their own expectations for themselves or the expectations of their parents for them may not be met either, which could lead to depression. And this is another issue that can create problems, where parents have expectations of the children.
Absolutely.
And there's a religious aspect. Sometimes there's religious conflict.
Yes, absolutely. It's funny how you can be an adult in the real world. You can be very powerful in your profession. You can have a lot of money. But the minute you walk back through that door of your parents' home, you are again the child in that environment. And if you've not done the things in your life that your parents had expected for you or had anticipated that you would be successful with, if you're somewhat of a disappointment in their eyes, all of that comes back. And it's like carrying that baggage around all day long, the whole day you're there. You know, you'll have other relatives asking questions about, well, I thought your mother said this, this, you were going to do this with your life. So you're constantly making excuses or explaining yourself. And that gets really difficult, because when you're outside of that environment, you feel successful. You feel like you're doing a good job. But then you come back into it and you are the child again.
One of the things that we're going to get to, and I'd kind of like to shift to you, Colleen, and ask you about, is, you know, a lot of people think that because the winter seasons, it's cold outside, there's not a lot of sunlight, there's more depression that's prevalent, and tied to what Aaron was just mentioning about depression and the stress of holidays. So we automatically think that that leads to a higher suicide rate in December and January when the weather is not great and we'd rather be inside. Is that true? Do you find that we are spiking in December and January with suicide attempts?
No, it's actually one of the bigger myths about suicide, that there's a holiday increase. And in fact, it's not true. We instead, at least in this county, in Allen County, see a spike in the spring. We often see another spike in June. And then we often see a fall October spike. But across the nation, on average, suicides are a bit lower around the Christmas holiday and the Hanukkah holiday, mostly because I think the safety net is actually there. It may be contentious. It may be hard to go home, but there, if you look around our community, there are a host of additional services that are provided during the holiday season that help support and put a safety net under people who might be struggling. You see additional food drives, coat drives, gift giving programs. There's a general spirit of celebration and camaraderie, despite some of the tensions within your personal relationships. There's an uplift in mood, I would say, in the community overall. Now, we've often wondered about suicide attempts. So does the suicide attempt data mirror the suicide death data? And there was just a recent study released in October that shows that suicide attempts also do not increase on Thanksgiving, on Christmas. Interestingly, there's a small uptick on New Year's Day.
Interesting.
And maybe that's perhaps that some of us who are feeling hopeless, that have made it through the holidays, that hope for a new leaf in the new year, a new path to go down that may be more positive, perhaps they wake up on New Year's Day and it's just not happening.
Or the prospect of a whole another new year is just too daunting after going through a bad year that was really rough. Is that possible?
Sure. Okay. Absolutely. All right. And I think that that explanation applies to the spring. So in the spring, we do tend to see an increase. And oftentimes it's because people are coming out of the sort of dark winter days. They hope that as spring comes with renewal and additional sunshine, that their mood will improve. Well, spring comes and maybe other people are feeling happier and more positive about their lives, but their life is not feeling more positive or happy and their hopelessness continues. So that's sort of a general explanation around why we see a spark or spike in suicides in the spring.
So even though they've described a letdown right after the holiday season, right after New Year's, January still is one of the lowest months in terms of suicide frequency, correct?
Yes, it is.
And who does commit suicide? What age ranges in Allen County? The gender? Who are affected most? What are the underlying problems that set an individual up for suicide? And what can these people do about it in our community who feel that hopelessness?
Well, in general, if you look at suicide deaths, not suicide attempts, that's a different set of folks, actually. Suicide deaths happen generally among whites as compared to other ethnic or racial groups. They tend to happen more among men, about four times more often than women, and they tend to happen in more of the middle age to older men. Now, that said, if you look at the leading causes of death, suicide's actually the second leading cause of death for some of our younger people. So it's not to say that we should not only focus on middle-aged white men because they're taking their lives. Younger people are certainly at risk. And if you look at suicide attempt data, that's exactly what you'll see is it's a younger face. Youth are about, they attempt suicide about 100 to 200 times more often than they actually die from suicide. So we see more attempts, thankfully they live, than we do deaths among young people. What contributes to suicide are often typical risk factors such as past abuse in the in their lives, some kind of mental health issue or a alcohol issue or drug addiction issue, or some kind of underlying mental health depression. Also, things like major breakups can trigger suicidal thinking. What we look for generally in terms of warning signs are people feeling hopeless. So any expression of people who are saying, I give up, or I feel like I'm a burden on you, or you won't have to worry about me after the holidays, something like that should be a trigger. Feeling trapped in their life and feeling no way out and no, that there's no solution to their problems. Feeling helpless about really getting out of their life issues or solving their life problems. And really withdrawing away from family, from friends. If they're on the basketball team and they're suddenly quitting the basketball team, or they're really into church and they're suddenly not in that youth group or in their church activities, that withdrawal from normal activities and hobbies and things they like to do should be seen as a warning sign. So those are some of the things to look for. Certainly anybody talking about death should be taken seriously. One thing, another myth besides the holiday myth, is that if we talk openly about suicide, we might actually encourage suicide, and that is not true. So the number one thing we can do as a community and as a loved one of someone who's struggling is to really talk openly about suicide. Mm-hmm. Ask those people that we're concerned about, say, hey, I'm worried about you. I notice you're struggling. I know you've had a job loss, or you've been feeling depressed, or you went through a divorce recently. And sometimes people can feel really overwhelmed by all of that. Mm-hmm. And when people feel overwhelmed, they may be thinking about suicide. I'm wondering if you're thinking about suicide. So asking directly is the best thing you can do, and then openly listening to what they have to say. If they're feeling suicidal, don't work on talking them out of it. That's sort of another tact that a lot of people take. Let's talk them out of it. Let's point out to all the reasons why they should continue living, all the reasons why suicide is not the solution here. That actually shuts people down. We need to openly listen to anyone in a suicide crisis. Let them talk about why they've come to think about suicide, and then connect them to the mental health resources we have in our community. We have St. Joe Behavioral Health. We have Parkview Behavioral Health. We have Park Center, Bowen Center. We have a host of mental health resources. So taking someone in for a psychiatric assessment, if you are concerned about them, is absolutely the perfect step. Take them to the ER if you're not sure where to go, or call the national hotline. And that national hotline is 1-800-273-8255.
Great. We're going to take a short break on Health 360. We have a couple people waiting to get on the program, so please do hold on. We'll be with you in just a few moments. You're tuned to WBOY Fort Wayne, and this is Health 360.
Flu arrived especially early this year, and it's a particularly tough strain. The good news? Doctors say this year's vaccine is well-designed, and more people are getting it. I'm Neil Conan, CDC Director Tom Frieden joins us. What are your questions about the flu? Email us now, talk@npr.org. The flu season starts early. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
You help pay for public education in Indiana, but from the Capitol to the classroom, the payback isn't always clear. You can find out how the state's policy impacts your family in our new State Impact Indiana Project, a local national collaboration between Indiana public broadcasting stations and NPR. You can hear the stories during Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition on NIPR, and dig deeper with a click on the State Impact logo at nipr.fm.
Great question. That is a great question.
And that's a great question.
Wow, that's another great question.
That's a great question.
Oh, that's a great that's a great question.
That is a great question.
What a great question.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear unexpected questions and unexpected answers.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Cameron Memorial Community Hospital, providing health and wellness services in the spirit of charity, concern, and excellence, serving Steuben County and surrounding areas. Information at CameronMCH.com.
Welcome back to Health 360 here on WBOI. The time is 12:25. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 260-452-1185. Email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook page.
One point to follow up on Colleen's last discussion, and that is that when teenagers speak about suicide or bring up the topic, it should not be passed off as an attention-getting device. These children are in pain. There is hopelessness here. They're in pain. They need help. The family should have an action plan. The family should get going and seek professional help right away. Do not consider teenagers speaking about suicide as merely an attention-getting device, please.
We have Daniel on line one. Daniel, welcome to Health 360.
Yes, thank you. I can say that I have both family and friends who have gone through emotional, and I want to say brain health concerns as compared to mental health concerns, because brain health sounds more medical than either metaphysical, spiritual, or personally under their own control or whatever. But so there's a little background there, a little of background on economic difficulties, where part of the family had a largest greenhouse in Illinois before the Great Depression, but that kind of fell away, and the interest in understanding rise and fall in financial and economic conditions. So the question that I have is how and, well, is it possible, and if possible, how can we create a community or regional narrative of hope that there will be a new opportunity, new job creation, new economic possibility for ourselves? I have some particular ideas on that myself, but it's perhaps not necessary to share those at this juncture. So is there a possible narrative for hope, maybe from business leaders or government leaders or community leaders, however that might be generated for ourselves?
Well, that's an interesting point, and to talk about some of the community resources that we have here in town for folks that might be struggling, especially during the holiday season, Daniel made a good point about mentioning about folks falling on hard times and maybe losing a job, maybe losing a house because of that. Colleen, Aaron, can we talk about some of the, maybe some of the support groups that we have for people that may be feeling depressed or need just to feel like they're not in this alone? Does anything jump out to either one of you about resources that we have here in Fort Wayne?
Sure. There's a wonderful resource that many people don't know about for those who do face a brain disorder or a mental health disorder, and that is the Carriage House. That often goes unrecognized. It's a wonderful mental health resource. It's actually a clubhouse model is what they refer to it at the national level, where there is support, camaraderie, activities. There's a cafeteria here where the folks who are members of the Carriage House actually cook the meals for the other members, so there's skill building as well. There's job training to place people in jobs. So there's a whole supportive environment right there at the Carriage House, which is on Lake Avenue, that provides that sense of a safety net for feedback, for friendship. There are also a whole host of different support groups meeting around town on depression. There's even one for those who've suffered suicide in their family and are coping with that loss. That's called We the Living, and it meets at the Plymouth Congregational Church downtown. You can call them for information. And both of the mental health centers, Bowen and Park Center, hold groups that sort of help people deal with depression, bipolar disorder, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Also, St. Joseph's Hospital and I'm sure Parkview both have 24-hour phone lines that people can call in if they want to just check questions or talk about how they're feeling at the moment or maybe even discuss an admission to either facility. The Ave Maria House is downtown, and that's a drop-in center where people are there all day long just breaking bread together, having coffee, talking, sharing stories, some brotherhood kind of feeling. And I think any one of the churches in our area would entertain a knock at the door if somebody felt like they needed to be reached out to or put into some kind of a assisted, community kind of thing where they can just connect to a community and feel some hope, some love, or some brotherhood.
Mm-hmm. I think that harkens back to what Daniel's phone call, I think, was asking, was how do we keep this sense of community and camaraderie going, even though it's not the holiday season? As you mentioned, Aaron, a lot of folks kind of push through the holidays because they are with people. And then after the holidays are over, that's when we start to see a spike in successful suicide. So perhaps as a game plan, keeping that sense of community going throughout the whole year, 365 days is the way to build ourselves back up and make sure that we don't just have these huge spikes of giving at the holiday season, that they're throughout the whole time. Aaron?
Coping is one of the things that we really need to kind of make a take-home point. If you have good coping skills, a lot of times you don't get to the hopelessness point. So What we need to do is practice our coping skills when we don't really need them. You know, whether it's meditation, whether it's prayer, whether it's just counting numbers, whether it's imagery, any kind of thing that we might personally use for a coping skill. We also need to practice that when we don't need it so that it does work when we do need it.
Colleen.
I like the caller's suggestion of building sort of this community sense of hope. And I think of related efforts in Fort Wayne, the Downtown Improvement District, sort of highlighting and celebrating the downtown culture. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, they've actually built the downtown culture. So there's a model there, a bit different than maybe hope and resiliency, but we could build on that. Additionally, that really amazing wrap that the community group put together.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yes.
It's phenomenal. And it gives you a sense of pride about Fort Wayne in a way that I don't think I've ever had a song do for me before. I can't remember the name of the song.
It's escaping me now, but I know that Kelly Lynch, who's been a guest on this program before, was heavily involved in it. And yeah, and it was just basically going through different parts of Fort Wayne and people singing about it. And it just, yeah, it looks really cool.
And it builds up that sense of identity and it builds up that sense of strength that we are worth something. We're producing things that matter. That's what the message of the song is. So could we take something like the United Day of Caring that shows us a mass community effort that you know, and it the message is we do care about what our community looks like, the condition of people's homes, whatever we're repairing and helping on that day. Could we take it to the next level and instill hope and connectedness? And really, suicide prevention, one of the latest trends is building on resiliency and connectedness. If we are connected to people who care, we are so much less likely to end up in a crisis, to end up in a suicide attempt, to end up in a behavioral health facility. That connectedness does matter.
And the obverse, not only are there community programs that can help us when we're alone and we need to be with others, but volunteering at these programs, at the community centers, at the soup kitchens, volunteering itself has been proven to be a great way of dealing with depression and possibly loneliness at the holiday season. The other thing to keep in mind is we do have Indiana vocation and rehabilitation programs, and when one is down because of economic downturns, job retraining, going back to school, not only will give you a positive, upbeat trajectory, but on the other hand, it really give you a better sense of self-worth and hope for the future as well. So don't give up is obviously our big message.
260-452-1185 is the number to call. If you have any questions or comments, you can always post on our Facebook page or send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm. We're talking about stressors and depressors of the holiday season, how to beat the holiday blues. And if you have a stressful situation that's coming up for you, or if you've found a good healthy way to cope with the holiday season and you'd like to share it with us, we'd love to hear from you. Again, that number, 260-452-1185. Erin, I wanted to ask you, what advice do you give to patients of people who know that they're going to be going into a stressful situation, kind of like you described at the beginning of the show, knowing that they're going to be slipping back into that role of the child, even if they're, you know, 30 years old, going back home? What can we do to prepare ourselves, to protect ourselves?
First of all, a personal inventory. And by that, I mean, just stop and think about yourself. Think about what you've done in your life, what your successes have been, perhaps what your failures have been, and kind of strengthen yourself against what might be a difficult day. Ask the people that you spend most of your time with. Get some self-validation from, you know, and approval from them so that you are stronger when you have to go back to some of those situations that are difficult. Then again, maybe you shouldn't go back to that situation that's so difficult. Part of your self-evaluation and your self-review should be, is this a place I need to be? Is this something that has to happen? Sometimes we do have to do some self-sacrifice and go to places where we don't really want to be, you know, to keep our significant other or our spouse or our family happy. At the same time, my sister once told me many years ago, why would you put yourself in a place that you know will cause you pain? So I often stop and think about that before I put myself in a place that may cause me pain. Mm-hmm. I still may go, And I still know it's going to happen, but it also gives me some strength in just knowing that I did have a choice. Mm-hmm. I put myself here to do whatever it is I need to do this day, and then I'm gone again.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that idea of choice. And one of my favorite quotes is about being response-able, that, you know, you will meet thorns in your life, roses and thorns. But when you really meet those thorns, you can choose your response to that thorn. So if the anxiety is high in the family and an argument starts, say, about the previous election results, something like that, you can choose to get up and take a walk. That's one thing I like to do is just get out and get outside. Or my sister and I have recently been talking about all of the siblings are getting together in one house. How are we going to handle that chaos? We may choose to get a hotel room for one of the families so that we reduce the chances for conflict among or chaos among the large group that's gathering. So mm-hmm. trying to brainstorm before we get there, what kind of coping strategies, whether it's getting a hotel room, taking a walk, not going down the path of discussing the political election results, something that may be preventative from a stressor standpoint. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the coping mechanisms to reduce stress at the holiday season is exactly that. Take time off from the old family disputes, the feuds, the arguments. Old wounds tend to open up at the holiday season, and families tend to regress to old, familiar reactions and behaviors. Don't do it. Plan ahead to stay out of these interactions. And there should be a spirit of compassion and forgiveness, even if it's temporary, it's been stated. But for those days that you're all together, make it work. To those in your life who have wronged you or you have wronged in some way, work it out, or at least let it rest during the time of celebration.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It is the season of giving, so hopefully we will all be as kind to each other as we'd like to be treated. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. Remember, you can always post on our Facebook page or send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm. We're going to take a quick break for the news, but we'll be back with more from Health 360 in just a few moments.
Everyone has a favorite author, actor, musician, or comedian. At All Things Considered, we don't just bring you the news of the day. We introduce you to the coolest people you thought you knew and learn what really makes them tick. What you hear might just surprise you. I'm Robert Siegel. Join us every afternoon for All Things Considered from NPR News. Conversations that connect. All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon, I'm Sean Beter with WBOY News. After already breaking the state's record for job commitments in 2012, nine more companies have pledged to create more than 2,500 jobs over the next few years in locations around Indiana, including in Fort Wayne. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, Indiana secured those commitments despite offering some of the lowest tax incentives in the region.
A recent New York Times report cited by Indiana Economic Development Corporation CEO Dan Hasler during Tuesday's announcement showed Indiana offering the lowest economic and tax incentives to incoming businesses compared to neighboring states. Hasler says Indiana wants to focus more on improving its overall business climate.
Part of the strategy about making sure that in the last 8 years, our environment has improved is because it's not just interesting for companies coming in, it's also interesting for the companies that are already here.
Governor Mitch Daniels says keeping incentives low has been a priority of his administration.
When we arrived, as best the records show, Indiana was committing $36,000 per job. That just seemed like too much, and now it's $9,000.
The nine companies pledging jobs Tuesday include a customer service firm, telecommunications companies, and food operations that will locate in cities such as Fort Wayne, Bluffton, Franklin, Marion, and Indianapolis. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
Republicans and Democrats have honored GOP Senator Richard Lugar on the Senate floor, praising him for his years of service. Republican leader Mitch McConnell said on the Senate floor Tuesday that Lugar represented the best of the Senate as an institution. McConnell says Lugar has put his extraordinary talents towards helping every citizen. The chamber's number two Democrat, Senator Dick Durbin, says Lugar has been an important voice in the Senate for decades and that his wisdom will be missed. Lugar is retiring from the Senate in early 2013. He lost a GOP primary to Richard Murdoch, who lost to incoming Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly in November's general election. And Indiana ranks 41st in the nation when it comes to health, according to a report published Tuesday by the group America's Health Ranking. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Dan Goldblatt reports, Indiana has begun to implement some new measures that could boost rankings in the future, but its overall rank fell in the past year.
State Health Commissioner Greg Larkin says Indiana's high rates of smoking and obesity are troubling, but he says programs now in place could better those numbers.
These sort of risk factors, obesity and percent of smokers, are things, you know, like they say, it's like trying to turn an aircraft carrier. It's going to take a while, even though we have some new tools in place.
Larkin cites the state's new public smoking ban and the Department of Health's obesity control plan for communities as new initiatives that could improve Hoosiers' health. David Lorman, the interim dean of the Indiana University School of Public Health, says to break the cycle of obesity in Indiana, schools need to be on the front line.
One of the things that's really seemed to be exciting and effective in schools is something as simple as providing fresh fruits and vegetables for kids to taste and to have during the day.
Lorman says the easy access to fast food, especially in communities with high obesity rates, is cause for concern. He says cheap, nutritious food needs to be accessible to all Hoosiers. Indiana's number 41 ranking is the worst ever for the Hoosier State and is four spots worse than it was rated in 2011. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Dan Goldblatt in Bloomington.
You're listening to Midday Matters Health 360 here on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter. This is WBOY News.
Welcome back to Health 360 here on WBOI. The time is 12:43. If you'd like to join the conversation, 260-452-1185 is the number to call. The lines are wide open. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia in the studio today with my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman, and our two guests, Aaron Rivera and Colleen Carpenter. And we're talking about stressors and depressors of the holiday season.
Yes, and I'd like to ask our guests, what positive things can individuals and families do to prevent the stress and depression at this time of year, especially if the holidays have taken an emotional toll on you in the past?
I like to tell people to communicate. Let their feelings be known. Be honest with people. You won't feel bad being honest with somebody. You may not like the fallout, but you'll feel better if you express yourself. There's a lot of planning that goes into the holiday season. You know, you really have to sit down and look at your own time. You still probably have to work. And then there's all the other holiday festivities that are going to fall in. And you have to plan to go and come and still get enough sleep. And you have to eat properly. Stay away from overindulging in the holiday beverages or the holiday sweets. Also, you know, budget your money. If you know for a fact that you only have $200 for Christmas presents this year, don't run out and charge a whole bunch of extra, because after the holiday season, you will definitely have a letdown when you open that bill and look at it. So try to stay within maybe the cash spending, or maybe have opened a Christmas account the year before. You know, get ready to do that for the next year so that you can only spend what you have prepared to spend for Christmas.
I like the idea of if you use computers a lot, having an Excel spreadsheet where you actually log in what you're spending so that it's very real to you how much you've spent and where you're going with it. It's so easy to sort of spend from the heart, which is really beautiful. But if you are limited in income, that can be quite painful. You know, come January, your bills can be quite large if you're not keeping track of it. I like to echo what you say about sleep. A lot of people forget about self-care. They get caught up in the holiday season, the rush of cleaning, cooking, shopping, and working, and visiting, that they don't get enough sleep and take care of themselves. When we don't have enough sleep, that's when anger can spike. That's when we don't respond well to conflict. That's when we don't have a good time.
Mm-hmm. Do things that are healthy for you. You know, for some of us, it's a bubble bath. For some of us, it's a walk outside. It's a time spent with our animals. Do something that you feel positive about to regenerate yourself so that when you do have to step into the situations that are uncomfortable or the situations that are toxic or taxing to us, do things good for yourself so you're prepared.
I also think reaching out. Sometimes this can be a lonely holiday for some if you've had a recent death in the family, or you don't have family in this area and you're not getting together because you can't afford to, or however it works out. If you're feeling sort of disconnected from people, reach out and connect to those that you love. Give someone a call. Have a conversation. Call someone you've been meaning to call on your to-call list. Or you can even connect via the internet. There's a wonderful website called reachout.com. that has a lot of tips. There are, you know, chat rooms at a variety of different places. And there's also a really wonderful website called What a Difference a Friend Makes. And I really like that website because it shows how supportive we can be to each other, especially during times of stress.
And try not to abandon your own healthy habits. Don't go off the diet you're comfortable, that you've been comfortable with. Don't stop exercising. Stick with your normal routines, not only sleeping, eating, exercise, etc., that you're used to, so to make a more smoother transition through this period. And learn to say no, and learn to seek help. You can't do it all. You can't bake every cookie and decorate every tree. Ask for help of friends and family. There's nothing wrong with that. And people enjoy helping you. And what goes around comes around, and work together. And obviously, if you're really down, if you're really depressed, if you're really lonely, of course, seek professional help, as we've been talking about, and recognize your own holiday triggers, such as whether it's financial pressures or personal demands or family expectations. Think about all this ahead of time. Just don't fall into it.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, you mentioned something during the break about communication and how sometimes we just kind of forget to communicate during the holiday season. And I was hoping you'd elaborate a little bit on that for our listeners.
We try to be politically correct. And sometimes it's not in our best interest to stay politically correct. If we feel like we have to say something, communication is huge. The more we hold back and the less likely we are to be honest, the more difficult it is for us. I'm not saying that people need to go out and be hurtful. You know, we don't need to say things that we know are automatic triggers for somebody else. But if your parent is still criticizing you for the professional choice you've made, you know, maybe it's time to say, this is what I wanted to do. This is my life, and this is what I wanted to do. And leave it at that. You know, instead of just always being victimized when you walk through the door because you didn't do what it was they wanted you to do. So communication is key, even with your significant other or your spouse. If you have to go to the office party one more time and you think you can't deal with it, tell them that. Tell them that you don't like the office party, that you don't like the way people represent themselves or how their behavior is, and see if you can't come to some kind of an agreement with, well, maybe we won't go this year, or maybe we'll go but only stay an hour. You know, limit yourself on some of these outings. You don't have to stay 6 hours because everybody else is staying 6 hours. So communicate. It's huge. You know, tell your children, I know it's uncomfortable. I know you don't like going to, you know, Aunt Susie's second cousin's house for Christmas dinner, but we need to do this because it's part of our way of honoring your grandmother. So we can do it. We can stay an hour and then we can leave. So as long as you can talk about it, lay the plan out, express to the other people that are involved how you feel, it can only be positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of planning is key here from this conversation that we've had today. If, you know, I mean, you can plan all you want and sometimes those plans get thrown out the door, but I think having a sense of being empowered by able to make some decisions ahead of time is kind of what we're getting at. Is that right?
Right. And then have your emergency resources on hand in case that just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Like the hotline, that 1-800-273-8255. You know, I often tell people that suicide hotline, if you're helping someone, you're concerned about a friend, your brother, your loved one, and you're stuck. You're talking to them. They are suicidal. You're not sure what's next. You can actually call that hotline and request for help yourself and just say, hey, I'm working with my brother, Jose. I'm really worried about him. He is suicidal. This is what I've done. Now I'm feeling stuck. What should I do next? Mm-hmm. So there are resources out there so that if your coping strategies don't work, that you have a backup plan.
That's great.
I think getting back to what Colleen mentioned earlier, that we have this great myth of holiday suicide, and much of this has been promulgated by the media. And there have been some recent studies to show this, and this idea that keeps coming back in the media can actually be dangerous to society.
Yeah, so if you think about it, it's a myth that suicides occur during the holiday. Unfortunately, by perpetuating that myth, it makes suicide seem more common, and it could encourage vulnerable individuals to consider it. So in essence, we might be accidentally putting out the message that it's normal and acceptable during stressful times of the holidays to do this. And it's not. What we understand the reality being is that we all have a lot of coping mechanisms. Most of us do not think about suicide, and most of us don't take action on the thoughts if we do have them. So by and large, we are a very resourceful and resilient group of people. So putting the message out there that suicide might be acceptable is not something we would want to do.
Mm-hmm. Or that more people are doing it It's a Wonderful Life is a great example of, obviously not committing suicide, but of a classic Christmas story and suicide being around it. That just came to my mind things are looking down around the holidays, so that's going to be an option for me. And that's not what most people are thinking. Mm-hmm. So I want to jump ahead a little bit, Colleen, we're entering a season where we're supported by a lot of people, or we're at least around a lot of people, where folks that might be thinking about suicide or having those hopelessness thoughts aren't going to necessarily act about it on December, January. What can we do now as folks to just be more aware of those people that might be prone to take action in those months that peak in suicide attempts, like May and April that you mentioned earlier?
If you know of anyone going through a hard time, it's always a good thing to check in with them. And if you think about it, if someone has recently lost their job or had a surgery or had a car accident, immediately there's a support network that forms underneath them. We bring them casseroles. We check in with them. People offer resources. We should also consider people who are going through a hard time in that same way. So we should definitely be checking in with people as the spring nears. If you know someone who is prone to depression, checking in with them as the spring nears in March, February, making sure that they're feeling okay about life. How is it going for you? Are you having thoughts of suicide? And just being aware of what to look for. Mm-hmm. If people are pulling away, if people are saying they're feeling trapped and there's no way out, if people are sleeping all the time, that's a big warning sign. If they have a big mood change, they say they used to be very positive people, a person, and they're no longer so positive anymore. Or maybe they're agitated. There's a big link between anxiety and agitation and suicidal behavior. So we need to view anxiety and agitation just as dangerous, potentially, as depression. So the best thing that anyone can do is check in with someone and express concern. Ask about suicide directly, and then be in touch with a mental health provider to get an assessment. Most of us are not mental health providers. We can't do psychiatric risk assessments, and that's fine. But we can ask the question, are you suicidal? And we can connect to a professional resource in the community like St. Joe Behavioral Health, Parkview Behavioral Health, the ER, and they can do a formal risk assessment. And if your loved one is saying, it's really not that serious, you can say to them, I'm not sure. I'm not a mental health provider. Let's ask someone who's trained in this and help let them decide how serious this is and do a formal assessment to make sure that you're okay, because you do matter to me and I do want you to live.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's also a call for primary care providers that when a patient comes in and says they're depressed, they get a prescription for an antidepressant. And that's that, or an anti-anxiolytic. As our caller pointed out earlier, there can be a little difference between brain health and mental health. And these medications that work on the neurotransmitters take care of the brain chemistry. But we really need to have these patients referred for counseling and to really get at what is the root of the depression and the extreme anxiety that's bringing them to the physician in the first place to ask for medication. Medication alone is not the answer.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, I wanted to ask you, we have just about 4 minutes left in today's program, but for folks that might be thinking that they need to reach out to an institution like St. Joe's or another group here in Fort Wayne, but they're a little scared about what they're going to be seeing upon an evaluation, can you just give a brief look into what a first checkup might be, what it might look like for somebody?
We have a wonderful assessment department. It actually is connected to our intensive outpatient programming there in the St. Joseph's Hospital, the medical office building there. You could walk in the door. It's actually it's the glass set of doors by the Coke machine if you're walking down Van Buren.
Mm-hmm.
No, not Van Buren.
Is it Broadway?
Yeah. It's a front side. Mm-hmm. It's Broadway. And they will talk to you right away. They will get your information, your demographics. They'll ask you what's going on. They'll help you do that assessment. There's also the 24-hour phone number. Probably the best way to reach that is go through the hospital line is 425-3000 and just ask for the assessment phone number, phone line, and then they can put you straight through. Even after office hours, we have it connected to the inpatient unit, and someone there will talk with you and find out what your needs might be. I would strongly encourage people to check in that way. If you feel overwhelmed, if you feel like you need help, we have just newly remodeled the inpatient unit. We have a great staff up there. If you need to be admitted, it's a safe place to be, and we will truly help you meet your needs. Maybe you just need outpatient therapy. We have an outpatient office. You can go in there. We have advanced practice nurses. We have psychiatrists that will take care of the medication. We have therapy people that will, you know, help you do your therapy, take care of those needs. Because like Dr. Rothman just said, medicine is just a tool. It is one piece of the puzzle. You cannot just take medicine and expect to feel better. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just a chemical. It's not going to help you with your past memories. It's not going to help you deal with your feelings about people. So the medicine is just one piece of it. So even if you get your medicine from a family practice, you know, your primary care provider that you've been with forever, maybe you should consider some therapy. If you have insurance, you can, you know, pick whatever you want, wherever you want. If you're limited on your funding, we have Park Center and the Bowen Center here in the Fort Wayne area, and they have wonderful programs that will assist you in your brain needs or your mental health needs. So you just need to just reach out. That's all you have to do. Or ask a friend of yours to go with you and reach out.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you've made that first move, somebody will be there to help you.
And in the worst case scenario, if you're worried about a family member and a friend who won't seek help and who you know is actively suicidal or in a crisis and needs some mental health treatment, you can call 911. And they have a wonderful team called Crisis Intervention Team, CIT is what they refer it to as. And you can say, I need a CIT officer. And they know how to come to someone's home and through dialogue, get an assessment done of, does this person need to see a mental health provider? Are they someone that needs to get into services now? And they will transport someone to those services if they need them.
Great. I think that's a wonderful way to end the show on. And Colleen, would you mind giving the suicide prevention hotline?
1-800-273-8255.
Great. Thank you so much to both of you for being a part of today's show. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1. Streaming online at nipr.fm, this is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.